Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Today I will speak about Vyasadeva. Generally, we speak what is given by Vyasadeva. Whatever we speak, as Vaishnavas, we are supposed to speak in pursuance of what Vyasadeva has given us. That is one of the qualifications of a Vaishnava. He doesn't speak nonsense. Vyasadeva speaks nonsense. But that's a strange statement, isn't it? Well, we'll get back to that later. But we should speak that which is received in parampara by those who are knowers of the intention of Vyasadeva, only repeat that which is sensible. Or even if they quote from Vyasadeva's less sensible writings. Actually, it's all sensible. Anyway, we should speak according to what Vyasa has given us. Sri Shankaracharya praises Vyasadeva, Namostute Vyasa Vishala Buddhe. What's the next word? Palaravindayata Patra Netra. He praises him that Vyasa has Vishala Buddhi, which means very great intelligence. And he says that his eyes are just like the petals of a fully blossomed lotus. Shankaracharya, he in this way offered obeisance to Vyas within Shankara's glorification of Bhagavad Gita. So Vyasadeva is so much to be respected because he is the guru of everyone who follows the Vedic path, or anyone who claims to follow the Vedic path. There are different schools who are known as Astik. Astik means those who accept the Vedas. They're known as Astik. So within that Vedic Pantha, the Vedic path, there are such different interpretations as they have a completely different interpretation. But they all claim to follow the Veda. So Vyasadeva in the Kali Yuga has given the Veda. Veda is eternal. Veda is not written by anyone. Veda is known as a Purusha, which means it's not written by anyone. Veda means knowledge. That which, or it's not composed by anyone. So Veda means knowledge. So knowledge exists automatically as an attribute of the subject of which it is knowledge. Just like if we say a cow, so by a cow it is understood an animal, largish, medium-sized animal, female of the species, with horns and a hump and a dewlap, if it's an Indian cow. which, so that is knowledge about the cow. So the very fact that the cow has certain characteristics means that the knowledge of the cow describes those characteristics. And there may be much more to be said, that the cow gives milk, and the milk is nourishing not only for the offspring of the cow, but also for human beings. Also the dung, the cow dung, is pure and beneficial. The cow urine is purifying and beneficial. Lakshmi resides in cow dung, and there's so much more to be said about the cow. The cow is very dear to Krishna. So these are, this is knowledge of the cow, and the knowledge of the cow exists because the cow exists. The cow is a cow, and therefore the knowledge about the cow simultaneously exists. And someone might write that down, but anyway, they did a good job writing it down, collecting it, but the knowledge is there automatically. So in the same way, Veda means knowledge. So that is knowledge about everything in the universe and beyond the universe. Anvayavayatireka abhyam, these terms are used directly and indirectly. The Vedas describe everything. And the Vedas, they're not written by anyone. Even Krishna himself doesn't claim to compose the Vedas. He says, Vedanta Krit Veda Ved. He's the compiler of the Vedanta, the knower of the Vedas. And the Vedas, they emanate from the breathing of Narayana. So Krishna is Aham Sarvasya Kabhava. He is the source of everything. But just like the jivas or the Krishna shaktis, they coexist with Krishna. So, one of his shaktis, jnana shakti, the energy of knowledge. And so the Vedas, they exist. Of course, the Vedas, they are in linguistic form. It's not impersonal knowledge, or it appears to be composed. But the Vedas themselves state that they are apaurusha, and they're not specifically composed. They exist eternally with Krishna. Everything emanates from Krishna. Nothing is independent of him. But at the same time, his energies, they coexist eternally with him. And the Vedas, in the same way, they exist with him. So Vyasadeva, his name is Vyas, means he who divides, the divider. So the Vedas, they eternally exist in human society. They are manifest in the world. Well, first of all, it said that Brahma, originally the Vedas come from the breath of Narayana. They are manifest within the material world, within each universe. They emanate from the breathing of Brahma. But in course of time, the nature of time in this world is that it has a debilitating effect, a destructive effect. Sakale neha mahata, divine yoga nashta. So, by the effects of time, yoga, which means that which by things are joined, that which joins, that becomes spoiled, or ruined. So in this way, everything in course of time, everything that is ordered becomes disordered by the force of time. And therefore, it has to be reorganized. By the end of each Dwarapa Yuga, the Vedic mantras, the Vedas consist of mantras, they become disorganized. And they need to be put in order so that people can take advantage of it. It's just like maybe you have the experience in quoting a verse, and then you get mixed up, and then you chant one line of one verse and another line of another verse. So, Savadhamam Puritchaja, Savadhamam Puritchaja, Dehino Svinyata Dehena. So it's all from the Bhagavad Gita, but it's not very helpful. It doesn't make much sense like that. You can't really explain much like that. You might even make a complete mess and end up saying something like, just surrender to me. Well, there's actually a Bengali versification of the Srimad Bhagavatam in which it says, Krishna is supposed to be saying, Jare amai karai ash, tare karai sarvanash. Whoever worships me, whoever desires me, I spoil them, I destroy them completely. Which is maybe based on the Yasyahavana Grihna Miharishe Tadana Mashanai verse, but it's not exactly a proper. I would often get this quoted to me. How was that? When I was preaching in Bengal. How is that? I mean, it's not that. It's not a question of how is that. It's just not that. It's not proper understanding. Of course, Krishna, he destroys the material life of his devotees. So, like that, the Vedas were all mixed up. So, Vishnu Chakra Thakur gives the example of a rich man. He has so many jewels, emeralds, sapphires, rubies, diamonds, but they're all mixed up. So, yesterday he did a job of sorting them all out and putting them in order. So originally Veda is one, but he sorted them into Rig Yajna, Sama, and also the Atharva Veda. Sometimes said there are three Vedas, sometimes said there's four, sometimes said there are five. The fifth Veda. Mahabharata is referred to as the fifth Veda. Sometimes the Puranas, Itihasas, they refer to as the fifth Veda. So, Gopi Panadana Prabhu explained this, that actually there are four Vedas. That Riksama Yajure Vacha. Actually, there are three mentioned. Actually, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna always refers to three. Trividya, what is that? Trividyama Somapaputa, the three Vedas he refers to. And the Atharva is Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajna Veda, Piyatharvana. Generally, there's as much as three or four. So, Gopi Pandana Prabhu explains in his translated his commentary, the Tattva Sandarbha, which is the work of Jiva Goswami, which explains Gauriya epistemology. So, he explains that this can be understood when he said the fifth Veda, that's figurative. They're not part of the original, or what might be called the original Veda mantras. They're not Veda in the sense that Shruti is Veda. They're Smriti, it's known as Smriti. So they're not the Shruti that should be, that is unchanging all circumstances, but it's eternal. But Smriti, the knowledge is eternal, but the format of it may not necessarily be. So Vyasadeva, he sorted out the mantras and made them available. Then he gave his own commentary, the Vedanta Sutra, which is, that means that's what he composed, the Vedanta Sutra. That's his own work. To give the purport of the Vedas. Because mostly people take the Vedas to be means for achieving sense gratification. Which the bulk of the Vedas, as Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, do appear to point towards us. Trividya mam sopa vita papa swagam ishva pratyam. Those who are desirous to go to heaven, they follow the three paths of the Vedas and they drink the soma juice. That also Krishna says that yami mam pushpitam vacham pravedanti avipassita. Persons who think they know the Vedas, they may be pundits, they've learned, but they don't really know the purport, so they take the purport of the Vedas to be that one should go to the heavenly planets and enjoy it. Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Nistra Gunyoga. Krishna says the Vedas are mostly concerned with the three modes of material nature, and he exhorts Arjuna, be transcendent, be beyond the modes of nature. So they ask, after compiling the Vedas, he gives that. But including that is the Upanishads, which are meant for coming closer to the ultimate purpose of love. And then they ask that he gives his own commentary on the Upanishads, beginning with the Sutta. Atato Brahma Jignasa. The purpose of the Upanishads is to inquire into the nature of spiritual reality. This is the actual purpose of the Vedas. So he compiled the Vedanta Sutra for the highly learned persons, and he compiled the Mahabharata for everyone, but particularly Sri Chitra Vija Bandhunam Traina Veda Gosha. Persons, women, illiterate, the Shudra class, those who are not fit for higher mental speculation, and the fallen members of the higher caste. For them, they're not fit for studying the Vedas, and therefore for them we ask Mahabharata, which gives all the teachings of the Vedas, but in a form that is interesting and accessible to persons who don't have the capacity for understanding the Upanishads. It requires some capacity also. Although every jiva is by nature satyanandama, eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, but according to the conditioning that we have received, the particular body that we have received at the present time, we have a certain conditioning. So some people's Satchit Anandatva, or their condition of being Satchit Ananda, is more developed than others, and so they are able to access the teachings of the Vedas, or others are less able to do so. And therefore for them the Mahabharata is composed, in which the essential and most important part is the Bhagavad Gita. But then again, the Bhagavad Gita is not very easy to understand. So Vyasa did his job. He sorted out all the Vedas. He didn't write them down. Writing is not supposed to write the Shruti. Not supposed to be written. So it was considered sinful. But he sorted it out and taught it to his disciples. The different Vedas were taught to different disciples. And he composed Vedanta Sutra, and he edited and compiled the Puranas, because originally the Vedic verses that were extend in human society, if you take together the Vedas, the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, the Puranas, it all comes to more than 5 lakh verses. So, Namaskrite Vyasa Vishala Buddhis, that's quite a job. 5 lakh verses. We can't even imagine. Srimad Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses. But that's also not the full extent of the Vedas, because on the planet of Lord Brahma, the Vedas are extended in a billion verses. But that's not all of it either, because there's no end to it. That's why we see sometimes some verses, when they're composed, they come to the mind of a rishi. That's the meaning of a rishi. The Vedic knowledge becomes revealed in his heart. So it's not that the rishi, he reveals that, but it's already there. It wasn't previously found, just like people nowadays feel. A crude example, geologists go and try to find oil, they get crude oil. So it's already there, but previously it wasn't known, and then they find it and they bring it out and they process it and they use it for the supposed benefit of human society. So in the same way the Vedic knowledge is there, but the rishi, different rishis, some manifest in the different rishis, some of it becomes manifest in their mind and they, they speak it, spoken. Vedic knowledge is, or knowledge is to be spoken. Writing down is a concession for less intelligent people. We call someone who's very learned a bookworm, or bookish. But actually books are for less intelligent people. Yesterday he wrote Vedanta Sutra, Puranas, but that's for less intelligent people actually. So, he gave just some. It seems like a very great amount to us, because if among us we can learn 20 or 30 verses, someone thinks, oh, very great scholar, knows so many verses. But look at Sukadeva. He heard the Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva, said thank you very much, walked out of the house. He didn't want to come out anyway. Sukadeva was so advanced that he thought even Vyasadeva was mad. He was staying in the womb of his mother, and Vyasa was saying, why don't you come out? We've already been there for 16 years. He said, no, you're in Maya. I don't want to be with you. You're an attached household. So, eventually Sukadeva came out at the request of Krishna, who's also an attached household. But Sukadeva had a good sense to understand that, well, if Vyasa says so and Krishna says so, maybe I should come out. So he came out and presumably offered obeisance to his father and mother and took off. He didn't want to wait at home. But then Vyasa found a means to bring him back, to bring Sukadeva back, by reciting the verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Sukadeva, who was already Atmavit, he was already Brahma Samatha, he was already in full knowledge of the self, he was already absorbed in spiritual realization. When he heard the verses of the Bhagavatam and found it attractive, then he understood, this must be spiritual, because nothing material can attract me. So then he went to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva, then he left. But then again he spoke to Parikshit Maharaj without any, there was no prompting, or he just happened to walk. Happened to means by the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who Sukadeva was worshipping within his heart. So he just happened across the place where Parikshit Maharaj was fasting till death. And then he just extemporaneously again spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he heard it once and he spoke it up. Not only did he hear it, but he understood it. Not only did he understand it, but he understood it maybe more than Vyasa. So, writing, Vyasa committed to writing the Shastra for the benefit of less intelligent people. We have this, it's called Nagari script. The Hindi, what looks like Hindi or in Sanskrit, is usually written like that. Well, it can be written in different... In this part of India, you'll find Sanskrit usually written in Nagari Lipi. Or it can be written in Gujarati or what, Telugu or Tamil or any... can be written in even in Roman, in English writing, with some diacritic on that. So, the exactly which alphabetical characters Vyasa used, I don't know if that's known, because previously there were this Nagari script is relatively recent. Previously there were other scripts, more like the South Indian, Tamil and Telugu. This Brahmi was one script. There are others. You can see them still. So this script on some temples, in some temples. Anyway, Vyasa wrote, or it said that he dictated the Mahabharata. He didn't exactly write it. That was written down by Ganesh. That's what's said. Although, according to Hridayananda Goswami, we can accept what he says about this. At least he said that, as far as he's seen, there is no Shastric record extent that Ganesh actually did this. But it can be accepted as a verbal tradition. Maybe it's written somewhere. But Ganesh wrote it down. And it's also said that Vyasa, he made a condition that I'll go on speaking as long as you can understand. Because the condition was that Vyasadeva should write and Ganesh would just go on, non-stop. But Vyasa said, as long as you can understand everything, I'll go on writing. If you can't understand, then you have to stop and think about it. When you understand, I'll go on again. So, the text of the Mahabharata is quite simple, but in between there are some difficult parts, and that's said, this is the folklore, how it goes. It's commonly repeated. That Vyasa made some difficult verses just to take a break from time to time. So it's it. So in this way, Vyasa divided the Veda. He himself and through his disciples, he edited the Puranas, 18 major Puranas and many Upapuranas for the sake of people in Kali Yuga. And his particular contribution is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, even after compiling the Vedas, Vedanta Sutra and Mahabharata, he was feeling despondent. He himself describes about himself within Srimad Bhagavatam, within Mahabharata. He appears as a character within his own world. So he describes how he himself was feeling despondent, which he shouldn't be. He thought himself that this is not... Why is it that I'm feeling despondent? Because he came to this world to do a service to humankind by giving them the knowledge by which they could be elevated So he did everything that he was supposed to do, but still he was feeling depressed. And then Narada appeared and told him that the reason for your despondency is that you have not clearly delineated the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You have not clearly described His names, forms, qualities and pastimes. Now, we'll find many verses, which especially the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Nana, Shastra, Vichara, Naika, Nipuna, Sadharma, Samsthapika, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they combed through all the Shastra and compiled books, especially the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or Hari Bhakti Vilas. They are guidebooks for devotees, philosophical and behavioral. They are guidebooks for devotees which quote from many scriptures. So we'll find that many scriptures are quoted, and we might think that, well, all the scriptures, they simply describe about bhakti. Well, that's true. Vede Ramayana Chaiva, Purani Bharatekata, Adhavantesa Mabhita, Harisarvatra Giyata. At the end of Mahabharata, which can be confusing also, because in Mahabharata we find, as in many parts of the Shastra, Krishna praises Shiva as supreme. Shiva also praises Narayana as supreme. And then Krishna also says, if anyone thinks there's any difference between myself and Shiva, then he's condemned. So there are statements such as that. But then the ultimate conclusion at the end of the Mahabharata is that all the Vedas, Ramayana, Itihasa, Purana, they're all beginning, middle and end simply praise Hari. And as stated in Mahabharata by Krishna himself, Vedaisya Savar Ahameva Veda. This Veda means knowledge, and the ultimate object of knowledge in Veda is Krishna. So we should understand that Krishna and Shiva are non-different, but we should also understand that they're different. Because if we refer to two entities, then automatically there's a difference. Just like yesterday, that question was asked, that what is the difference between Rukmini Dwarkadish in the ISKCON temple and Dwarkadish in the ancient temple? And the immediate answer is that, well, the very fact that you're stating that there are two means that there's difference. So intrinsically they're not different, but there's difference also. So all the Vedas, they simply describe Krishna, but not everyone can understand it. And in a sense, not everyone is meant to understand it. It's meant to be tricky. It's meant, the Vedas are composed in such a way that people become attracted to the flowery words which recommend elevation to the heavenly planet, so they can gradually advance on the Vedic path and come to the point of understanding that all the Vedas are meant for praising Krishna. That they may, those who have the inner understanding, they can see that every verse, every syllable is simply praising Krishna. But those who don't, they may not find Krishna there at all. Or they may come to some conclusion that Vishnu is a later Vedic god, is what the mundane scholars say. The earlier Vedic gods were there, Agni, Varuna, Indra, and later Vishnu. And this tribal god, Krishna, or Vishnu, became acquainted with the Vedic Vishnu. So this is what the mundane scholars say. We don't say. We say, kick the mundane scholars in the face with boots, echoing the words of Srila Prabhupada. Not to be done literally, but the point is we don't accept what the mundane scholars say. There's no reason The Vedas have their own internal consistency. We don't need someone who's got his brain all messed up with mundane education to try to explain all these things. We need to understand the Vedas from the Acharyas, which is the system. Acharya Vam Purusho Veda. One can understand the Veda who has Srila Prabhupada translated this, Acharya Vam Purusho Veda. One who is completely surrendered to his Guru, he can understand. It's not simply a matter of, I sat in a ceremony and I got a new name, so now I know everything. It's not like that. One who is completely surrendered. Yatsya Devi those who have full faith in the Supreme Lord and in the Guru, bona fide Guru, to such a person all the import and purport of the Veda is revealed. It doesn't come by brain power, because we don't have any brain power anyway, especially in Kali Yuga. We have so little brain power that we have to have it written down, and even then we can't do it. So, among the various people of almost no intelligence, some may appear to be more intelligent than others. And it's just like among the ants, one may be more intelligent than another, but still they're ants. So in human society, someone may be a PhD, a big professor, and they're more intelligent than other people. But still, what is the intelligence? It's one pea brain is a little bit bigger than another pea brain. So, we accept the version of Vyasa Vishala Buddha. Those who follow the expansive, Vishala means expansive, intelligence of Vyasa. We accept his system of understanding. So Vyasa, he compiled all the Shastra, and every Shastra, there is glorification of Krishna directly. Many of the most important verses that we quote come from scriptures other than Srimad Bhagavatam. It's like Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purana Shuddha Nitya Mukta Abhinavanna Manadinaho. The description of the name of Krishna, being non-different from Krishna, fully pure, beyond the influence of material nature, complete, Nama Chintamani, Krishna, the name of Krishna, just like that, all fulfilling, touchstone. Chaitanya is the very form of Chaitanya Rasa, conscious, emotional, transcendental feeling. So the name of Krishna and Krishna, they're non-different. So this is established in the Padma Purana. But then if you go to the Padma Purana and we think, well, that's good, let's have a look. We'll find so many things which are not Krishna conscious. Mostly description of Brahma on his Padma, on his lotus, Padmasana, sitting on a lotus. Similarly, we find in Brahma Vaivarta Purana, there is description of the spiritual world of Golok. There is also description of Ganesh, and Brahma. So it's not very clear from, or it may not be very clear from the works themselves, what's the purpose of the asceticism? Krishna is glorified, but then others also appear to be glorified, and therefore, by going through the Vedic canon, one may come to the conclusion, which is the common conclusion in Hinduism, that there are many gods. Generally, the impression of Hinduism in the world beyond, well, among Hindus and among non-Hindus is that Hinduism is polytheistic. Many gods. And ultimately it's all one. This is the general idea. So, Vyasadeva was rebuked by Narada that the real purpose of the Vedas is to lead everyone to Krishna. But you've done such a good job of making the Vedas available to everyone at all different levels, with all different kinds of proclivities, that it's not clear who, especially the people in Kali Yuga, it won't be clear to them who is supreme, what is the actual purpose. So then Vyasadeva compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Nigama Kalpataro Dalitam. The Vedas are described as being just like a desire tree. You can get anything. You can, from the Vedas, you can go to heaven, you can go to hell, you can achieve power over the earth, you can get beautiful women, you can become a beautiful woman, anything. Get anything you like. Of course, it may not be that easy that you just pick up a book or you do some vrata and then you become converted into a beautiful woman. Well, that's not even considered very laudable in the Vedic teachings. But you might have to wait. You see, if someone has a desire to be a beautiful woman, then they might have to wait till the next life. If you do enough austerities and this and that, but that's a waste of time. Not recommended. But it is recommended by Vyas, that if you want a beautiful form, if you want power, if you want money, you can do this and that and so many things. Please ask this person to take his photograph outside and not start it for you. So, what is the actual purpose that's made very clear in Srimad Bhagavatam from the very beginning? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva Janmadhyasya Yataha Satyam Param Vimahe. So in this way, he, Vyasadeva, in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, makes it clear that the Janmadhyasya Yataha, the source of all emanations, which is the subject matter of the highest part of the Vedas, or what is considered actually Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest part. If the Srimad Bhagavatam gets the conclusion of the highest part of the Vedas, that the Param Satya, Param Brahma, Atato Brahma Jignyasa, this Atato Brahma Jignyasa, that spiritual reality which is to be inquired into is Janmadhyasya Yataha, is the source of all emanations. That is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. That is Vasudeva. So those who are worshipping gods and those who think that they're beyond, those who are interested in spiritual emancipation, they're both brought in to understand this Satyam Param, the supreme truth who is to be meditated upon. And that is in the first three verses of Bhagavatam established. Who is Krishna? Mughyanti yat Suryaha. All those demigods that you think you should be worshipping, they are bewildered by him. Trisarga Misha. He's in all phases of time. It's not just that Vyasadeva. Today is Tuesday, so we'll worship Hanuman. So just Vyasadeva, it happens to be the day for Krishna, so we'll worship Krishna today. Not like that. But in all phases of time, Krishna is the reality, the truth, beyond illusion. He always is. So that's the sun. And that in Bhagavatam, the solid pronouncement from the very beginning is, even though in other parts of Shastra, there has been some trickery, and not clearly stated what is correct. Here, there is no, here in Bhagavatam, everything is very clearly established. Vedyam Vastavam Atravasta. This is the actual subject of Bhagavatam. It is the ripened fruit of the desire tree of Vedic knowledge. So Vedas, they describe about Krishna, but specifically in Bhagavatam. Everything is brought together, and then Krishna, not just another god to hand out some, here you are, you can become a demigod, you can have a long life, you can have power, and all these things. But Krishna is appreciated as Akhilaras Amurti. He is the very form of all rasa. So this is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam, which Vyas, we in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, worship Vyas particularly for his contribution to Srimad Bhagavatam. Because even if all the other Vedic literature was not there, and Bhagavatam was there, that is sufficient to award the ultimate goal of life. That's what's actually required. The others are not required. Others may be quoted to substantiate points within the Bhagavatam. But actually we find in the Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam echoes, substantiates, and clarifies all the subjects that are given in the Upanishads, Puranas, and many of the points. So, they parallel Upanishadic passages and clarify them. So Vyasadeva, obviously he's not an ordinary person. If he was an ordinary person, we wouldn't be speaking about him or speaking what he has given or glorifying him 5,000 years after his disappearance. Practically in the Western world, there's no one even known from that far back. Their history goes back how long? 3,000 years maximum. And they hardly know the names of anyone. Who are the known people? A few Greeks are known from going back, I think not even 3,000 years. But in the Vedic history, we have the names of many, many people are recorded, just like Ramchandra Bhagavan. He was present in the world over 1,000,000 years ago. And the full history of him is given. So the important people, their names are remembered. For most people, they're not remembered. Even the Brahmas or so many big demigods, they may not be remembered. But Ram is remembered. Vyasadeva is remembered for his contribution 5,000 years ago, giving the Veda. He's known as Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. There are different Vyasas. The next Vyasa, who's going to be the next Vyasa? Vyasa is one of the Chiranjeevis. He's still alive. He's there in Bhadradasha. You can go and see his Vyasa Gufa. We went there, right? Many years ago. The cave where Vyas recited, gave the Vedic literature. He's still there, but we probably won't see him. Madhvacharya went to see him. He's still living. And so he's one of the seven Chiranjeevis, or persons who, they go on living. They're from the Puranic age. So who's the next Vyas? He's one of those Chiranjeevis. Anyone? Ashtakama. Let's see. Even the worst person can become great person. So, yeah, Vyasa is still living. He's a special person. He's known as an avatar, Narayan avatar. Among Sampradayas, it's controversial issue. I mean, not such a thing. I mean, there are so many controversies. It's just one of them. Not a very important controversy. Srila Prabhupada consistently describes Vyasa Devi as Shakyabesha. So according to some Sampradayas, Madhva Sampradaya, they say he's Purna Avatar. He's directly Vishnu himself. Anyway, it doesn't make that much difference because what he contributes, that we have to take advantage of. According to Gopi Brahmananda Prabhu, who's studied this, I haven't studied it, but he studied it. And his opinion is that this particular Vyasadeva is a Narayan avatar. Although generally, the Vyasas who appear at the end of every Dwarapa Yoga, they are Shaktavaisavatars. At the end of every Dwarapa Yoga, there's a Vyas, because it's needed. It's needed at the end of every Dwarapa Yoga for the stupid people of Kali Yoga. It's not only in this Kali Yoga that people are stupid, it's in every Kali Yoga. I mean, in general, everyone in the material world is stupid. Ichhadvesha samuttena dvandamohena bhavati sarvabhutani sammohana sargayanti paranta. Everyone is stupid. Who's born, just being born in this material world is a certificate of our foolishness. Except people like Vyas who come to lift us out of this foolishness. So at the end of every Dwarapa Yoga, there's a Vyas. And this particular Vyas, who's still living at Bhagavad Ashram, is, his particular name is Dvaipaya, Krishna Dvaipaya. He's known as Krishna because he's very black in color. And he's known as Dvaipayana because he was born on an island. Island born. Dvipa means island. And he's Dvaipayana. That history of his birth is given. Is that when Parashara was crossing the river with Satyavati, rowing the boat, Parashara happened to notice that it was an extremely auspicious asterism, is it called? And that if a child was begotten at this time, it would be a very great person. So he told Satyavati this, he said, well, she said, well, come on, I'm not married. You just can't have sex anywhere, anytime. He said, well, in this case, you can. So then the child was immediately born and on the island, and Satyavati recovered her virginity by the grace of Parashara. She also lost her fishy smell, and Vyasadeva was born. So, yeah, he appears in Srimad Bhagavatam, his history is given. In Mahabharata, compiled by himself, he also, he's not just writing the Mahabharata, not just sitting in a cave. He's busy writing, compiling the Shastra, but from time to time, as required, he enters the arena of human activity for some specific purpose. He was called to father what became the three brothers, Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidur. And the story of their birth, it said that, well, because Vyas was very fearsome in appearance and smelly, he was a rishi. So, therefore, Amba closed her eyes and she got a blind son. Ambika blushed and she got a pale son. And Ambalika couldn't even know. She sent the maidservant and she got Vidur as the son. So, Vyasadeva is described as being in appearance not very beautiful. In his activities and in his, he himself describes in his activities and in his writings, he reveals the Satyam Shivam Sundaram, the eternal auspicious beauty, the actual beauty. So Vyasadeva, he's the original guru. Everyone in the Vedic tradition who takes the role of guru is supposed to be a representative of Vyasadeva. The word guru has entered the English language, and they talk about sports gurus, lifetime coaching gurus. But actually it is a serious misuse of the word, because guru in the Vedic culture means a follower of Vyasadeva. It's not a teacher. It's not a learned person or a teacher in the Western understanding. It's a very different understanding. Guru in the Vedic tradition may not be even very learned, but if he understands the essence of what Vyasa said, his qualification is that he gives what Vyasa said. That may not be only in the field of spiritual understanding. There are so many branches of Vedic knowledge. But everyone has to worship Vyas. Everyone has to worship Saraswati. Even there are so many Muslim musicians who play classical Indian music. But they have to. And you cannot perform Vedic music without first supplicating Saraswati. You may play all the beats and everything the same, but it's just not Vedic music. It's understood. In Vedic understanding, knowledge is coming down. It's a divine gift. It's nothing to be proud of. It's a gift bestowed. If anyone becomes proud that now I know so much, that immediately means they know nothing. Because Vidyagatati Vinaya. Knowledge gives humility, because if one actually knows who we are, then we should know that I'm insignificant. So Vyas, he's known as Guru, because he's the Guru of all Gurus. Any knowledge that any Guru is going to impart, if it's actually knowledge, he must have received it through Vyas in disciplic succession. And if he's going to give that knowledge, he can only give the knowledge which is given by Vyas. So sometimes gurus, they're also called Vyas. Any speaker on Vedic knowledge is considered to be representing Vyas, because that's what they have to do. Nothing else. That is the qualification. The qualification to speak on Vedic knowledge is that one represents Vyas. So the speaker is considered to be non-different from Vyas, because he gives the same message as Vyas. You'll see in the when they have these Bhagavad Kathas, they put up a big poster. Sometimes they'll write Pravakta, which means speaker, and then they'll give the name. Or sometimes they write Vyasa, and then they give the name of the speaker. Because it's understood that the speaker is supposed to represent Vyas. So sometimes some people have the idea that there wasn't actually any person called Vyas, but that Vyas is just a name given to anyone who speaks Vedic knowledge. Well, it's true that anyone who speaks Vedic knowledge is called Vyas, because there was the person, Vyas, who gave it. That's why. So many misunderstandings come by not following Vyas. We offer respect to Vyas, the person Vyas. It's not just some nebulous idea. He's a person who we offer respect to. The Vyasa Puja. Generally that's sort of the Vyasa Purnima. That is generally in all Vedic sampradayas, Vyasa Deva is worshipped one's own guru is worshipped on Guru Purnima or Vyasa Purnima. But in the Gauriya Sampradaya, the system is to do on the day of the appearance of the individual guru. So that's come up in the Gauriya Sampradaya relatively recently. So, I had some notes which I didn't look at. Yeah. Okay, I think I said... Oh yeah, his... Srila Prabhupada referred to Vyasa as the literary incarnation of God and as the original spiritual preceptor for all mankind. One scholar appreciated Srila Prabhupada as being the present or the modern day incarnation of Vyasa. And Srila Prabhupada said he accepted that. And said yes, otherwise how is it possible that I could have written so many books? So obviously Srila Prabhupada was empowered by Vyasa to give that knowledge, just like Vyasadeva presented the knowledge in a form suitable for the less intelligent people of that time. So Srila Prabhupada presented it again, just the essence of all of that, in a manner suitable for people of this age. So Srila Prabhupada, being the founder Acharya of ISKCON, is comparable to Vyasa being the guru of everyone in the Vedic tradition, that within ISKCON, or actually Prabhupada said my books are the law books for mankind for the next 10,000 years. So. We should accept what Lord Prabhupada says as being, what Srila Prabhupada says as being the voice of Vyasa in the modern age. What Vyasa presented to us, Srila Prabhupada has given that in a form suitable for us in the modern age. So, yeah. Alright, I'm finished there. Hare Krishna. Any questions? No. What is the time? Okay, maybe take one question and then we'll finish, because some devotees are going to beg Dwarka now. So, it takes what, at least, I would think, go to beg Dwarka and to... No one's going? Already gone, everyone who is gone. Alright, okay. So, any question? You speak it and I'll repeat it in the mind. Shout. I can't hear him. I can hear the dog bark. Speak more loudly.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Recently I was in Italy during the Prabhupada Marathon in Kishkanda. So I heard that there was two new books called Kishkanda. There was one title Kishkanda.
The new flag is coming. Whatever little noise you hear is going to increase. We'll take this as a sign from Dwarkadish to finish this lecture here. So your question is not heard and it won't be answered now. Please keep it on hold. For later. Vyasa can see all phases of time, past, present and future. So I can see into the future. And within about 1 minute, it'll be too loud for any discussion here, even with mics. So we'll stop here. Yeah.